Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This interview is sponsored by a new and standout destination in Starkville, Mississippi, Alora Modern Wellness. Founded by longtime healthcare professionals Rich and Lisa Lopez, Alora blends advanced technology with personalized care to help you feel your best. Whether it's whole body cryotherapy to reduce inflammation, an infrared sauna to detox and relax, LED light therapy to recharge at the cellular level, or assisted stretching to improve mobility, Alora has something for everybody. Their mission to provide science-backed wellness in a calm, welcoming space. Whether you're recovering from a tough workout, managing stress, or just investing in your long-term health, Alora is your modern approach to feeling better mind, body, and soul. Stop by 821 C Highway 12 right across from Kroger or explore more at AloraModernWellness.com. Big game midway through the season for Mississippi State. A game that I would say that if State wants to have postseason aspirations, this one's going to go a long way towards that. It's the trip to Florida. Florida, of course, coming to Starkville last year and getting the win. Graham Hall joins us from Swamp 24/7. And, Graham, when I look at this Florida team, I like a lot of the pieces. I voted Lagway second team All-SEC. I was shocked to not see him in the three quarterbacks to get preseason honors, if we're being honest. I like a lot of the skill position pieces. My concerns are with the head guy, with Billy Napier. We talk every year about players developing and getting better. Is Napier better as a coach this year than he was the previous couple of years in Gainesville?
I think every coach would say that they're learning lessons from the previous years and improving, and I think that that is the case for Billy Napier. You know, I think every coach out there has a better grapple on the state of college football, and there's been so much change over the last 5 years, and we now have more of it with revenue sharing and programs hiring general managers and handling your roster and dealing with player agents and all these things. And the 60 minutes of football, I think, for Billy Napier, there's been a lot of questions about his prowess as a head coach and his offense. And I do think that it's such a interesting conundrum in a sense, because coaches get here to this level of coaching teams like Mississippi State and Florida and Georgia from their decision making and then kind of taking a back seat and being like, hey, I can give some of these things up is kind of counterintuitive in a sense, because they got here because of their decision making. And while there are other coaches around them who put them in the position to be successful, they wouldn't be here without the work that they put in. And when you're a head coach, kind of taking that step back and putting your future in someone else's hands can be a difficult thing to embrace. And I think that Billy Napier thinks there's pros and cons to him being the play caller at Florida. One is the continuity aspect with quarterbacks. You know, you bring a quarterback back for a second year, there's an argument to be made that they're going to improve from having the same voice in their ear, not going to someone else. And there's also a desire for coaches to give a path to a younger assistant who's on the rise, to give them the opportunities that they were presented with a decade or two decades ago when they were coming up in the profession. To answer the question, I do think that Billy Napier has continued to evolve as a head coach. We're going to have to see the on-field product, of course, to see if that rings true. But I do think the continuity aspect with DJ Lagway having the same voice in his ear, along with the desire for Billy Napier to help a guy like Russ Callaway, who has taken an expanded role with the offense. And to be clear, Napier consults all of his offensive head coaches when it comes to the play-calling design and the decision-making process and the game plan in the week leading up to each contest. So we're going to have to see how much of Russ Callaway's influence is entrenched in Florida's offense this upcoming season. I think that's one of the big questions that a lot of people are looking to see answered. You know, how much talent they have at skill position. Obviously, with DJ Lagway, if the offense is more explosive, it's going to be funny. Billy Napier's not going to get a ton of the credit. A lot of it's going to go to Russ Callaway. But if it's archaic and boring, even in a sense, he's going to get all the blame. So it's an interesting position to be in, absolutely. But I do think he has improved. Now at, you know, 46 years old, just celebrated his birthday, he's still a relatively young coach in this profession who's only going to continue to get better and better and learn from each year as he moves forward.
All right, let's talk about Lagway, because that's a guy, in terms of ceiling, I don't know that any quarterback in the conference is higher. And that would include Manning, that would include Sellers, that would include Simmons at Ole Miss. I really like all those guys. But Lagway is the franchise player in this conference, in my opinion. So now it's his team. You know, last year, Graham Mertz was still there. You knew they were going to both play. The injury happens. Lagway takes over, then he's hurt. Now we're full bore with DJ Lagway. What are your expectations for him this season?
I mean, they're incredibly high. I think that you saw him last year, his deep throw ability. He's a touchdown waiting to happen on any given play. His ability to make plays happen if the play call breaks down is just incredibly valuable from an intangible aspect, because it means that it's not all going to fall down on ideal play design. And what we just mentioned with Billy Napier, that could be something that is his undoing, in a sense, is his play calling. And if you have a quarterback who can make plays outside the play call, they're going to make you look really, really good. So I think absolutely his ability is exceptional. There are things for him to improve upon, which I think that has been maybe one of the under-the-radar storylines. You know, he did make some poor decisions last year in reading defenses. You know, he was a first-year player. The expectations for him to come in and just know what he was supposed to do were probably unfair. You know, I know that he was the number one quarterback in the class of, what, 2024. But expecting that guy to come in and instantly crush it, it maybe have been unreasonable expectations. And I think a lot of people will tell you that he exceeded expectations last year. If he could take the next step in decision-making, reading defenses, not being overly confident in forcing a throw where a guy isn't open or throwing into double coverage, then he's going to continue to get better. Sometimes you got to know just to, you know, live to play another play. And if he can do that this year and avoid some of those undesirable, you know, giveaways, he's going to be even better. You know, you mentioned the SEC Media Days poll, and I totally get it, because if we're judging it solely off okay, if all of these quarterbacks are healthy for 12 full games, how are they going to stack up? And you could say, well, that's how it should be done. You shouldn't be factoring in injuries into the conversation. But I think it's quite clear that a lot of people are skeptical, fair or not, about DJ Lagway's availability this upcoming season. You saw him go down injured last year. He missed, you know, a lot of reps in spring camp. He was a modified participant, is what they called it. The shoulder injury has been a talking point even in July in SEC Media Days. And until he comes out there and is viewed, you know, throwing in practice, competing in routes on air, taking full practice reps, and until he actually goes through the season and stays healthy and they protect him and he shows his athleticism, there are fairly some skeptics out there. And I think that that's a little bit fair. You know, he's going to have to prove it. And I'm sure it's just going to be further motivation to show that he is a top three quarterback in the SEC. But there are fairly some questions, in my opinion, about him staying healthy the entire year. And maybe that's why people don't think he's going to have the production, the numbers that some of these other quarterbacks who have proven that they are more durable, have avoided injury, have gotten some more respect over him at this point in the year. So I do understand it, but if we're judging it solely off ability, I do think that DJ Lagway is a top three quarterback in the SEC. He's just going to have to stay healthy for 12 games and showcase it.
I really like the backfield for Florida. You know, Baugh is a really good running back. I think they've got some great talent there. The receivers, I think, are super talented, but they're a little less proven. Do you like the pieces around Lagway in this offense?
Oh, absolutely. I think that they're really being slept on. I saw that a couple outlets named the wide receiver position for Florida as the biggest question mark for the Gators coming into the year. And I understand that on surface level, because they're replacing two guys in Shimerae Dike and Elijah Badger, a pair of former transfers who were their top two receiving targets last season. And you look at the guys that they're going to be relying on this upcoming season, some unknowns for sure. I think J. Michael Sturtevant, you look at his numbers from last year at UCLA, you can sit there and say, well, this is not a number one wide receiver, but look at the quarterback play and look at what he did at Cal before he transferred to UCLA. I think he's going to step into the SEC and make his name known this upcoming season. I think a lot of people are forgetting that Eugene Wilson, when he's been healthy, has been absolutely dynamic. That was a guy who had to have, you know, surgery on his hip midway through last season, fixed a congenital issue, you know, something that he's been dealing with since birth. And everything that we've heard since then, since he fully recovered, is that this is a guy who is well on his way to being one of the top wide receivers in the SEC. And then you look at the guys that they either bring back or added from the high school level, Aiden Mizell and Tank Hawkins coming back after last year, two guys who can hit 23 miles per hour. You guys saw up there in Starkville how dynamic Aiden Mizell can be. You know, he had multiple impressive catches, was able to make guys miss in the open field. And that's someone who may be Florida's, you know, fourth or fifth wide receiver this upcoming season. And then you look at Tank Hawkins, another guy who flashed last year And then everyone always loves to talk about the shiny new toys. You get Dallas Wilson to come in, one of the top wide receivers in the 2025 class, broke multiple spring game records this upcoming in this past spring ahead of his first season at the collegiate level. He had 10 catches for 195 yards and 2 touchdowns in the spring game. This is a guy that if he can make an instant impact in the offense as a freshman, that's going to be huge for Florida. Vernell Brown III, a legacy guy at Florida, who all the top programs, Georgia, Ohio State, were all after him. He comes in and is going to look to play. I think they're loaded there. And then, yeah, the backfield, Florida's going to run the ball a ton. That is just Florida's MO. They're going to look to establish the run. And Jaden Baugh and Jacoby Jackson look to be an ideal 1-2 punch for Florida. You guys also know this name up there, KD Daniels. That is someone who, he was the high school player of the year as, coming out. This is a guy who I think is going to be the number three back on Florida's roster. You're going to see him a lot more this upcoming season. Treyon Webb is fully healthy, and they added a lot of guys in Duke Clark, Byron Lewis. Chad Gasper is going to spend the year recovering and getting better. This is a backfield that I think is going to be dynamic, and they're going to take a by-committee approach this year to keep some of those guys healthy and fresh. So I love the skill position talent around DJ Lagway. I think it's really being slept on outside of Gainesville. I think they have a lot of potential. Maybe not a ton of production and experience coming back, but I think a lot of guys who by the end of the season are going to be pretty well-known names outside of Gainesville.
Defensively, a season ago, this was a below average team, second to last in total defense, 12th in scoring defense. But they bring back a lot of experience when you look at this lineup. It's crazy. I talk about this website all the time, rlads.com. I'm sure you're familiar with it, where they keep the depth charts. And there's not a lot of transfers. There's not a lot of new faces in that what they project as the starting lineup for the Gators. Can this defense take a step forward in 2025?
Yeah, they have a lot of continuity on the roster. They did lose some key pieces. Jason Marshall Jr., when he was healthy last season, was the top cornerback in man coverage for the first half of the year. Shamar James was a very productive linebacker for Florida for all 3 seasons he was in Gainesville. You lose TreQuest Bridges as well, a guy who I think is going to be someone who has a multi-year career in the NFL. A lot of pieces that you have to replace in all three levels, but you look at the talent that they brought back, especially on the defensive front, getting George Gums Jr. back after a really impressive debut season. Tyreek Sapp is, I think, one of the better edge rushers in not just the SEC, but in the nation. I think that he's going to be someone who's going to make a case for being a first-round pick in 2026. And then obviously Caleb Banks. Banks didn't start the season the way he wanted. October wasn't ideal for him, but he was an absolute monster in November, and the message to him is if he can play the way he did in November for the entire 2025 season, that's a guy who has first round pick written all over him. His ability to get to the quarterback, be disruptive along the line, he was just a menace against LSU and against Ole Miss, and that's a huge returning piece for Florida, and it's a big money year for him. And then you look at linebacker as well, in that front seven, Grayson Howard comes back. He had a really good season for Florida last year, ended up getting injured there in down the stretch for the final 3 weeks of the year. Miles Graham is stepping into a starting role as a sophomore, going to compete with Aaron Childs and Jaden Robinson in that linebacker unit. And then you have Cormani McClain, a very well-known name, a former five-star guy who is competing for a starting role opposite Devin Moore. Devin Moore has been a really, really good corner for Florida as well, but it's again a question of availability for him. He's been injured in all the last 3 seasons, hasn't been able to finish what he started, but when he's been on the field, he's been extremely effective, really, really good in coverage, more physical than I think he gets credit for. Just has had a bad run of bad luck when it comes to injuries. So you factor all those guys I just mentioned in with the fact that you return your top, starting safeties from last year and Jordan Castell, a guy who started as a freshman, started every game last year, was Florida's leading tackler. And then Bryce Thornton came along as the season progressed. He did really, really well down the stretch there, had 2 interceptions against Ole Miss. And this defense did make strides. I know they ranked, near the bottom in the SEC in many categories. They had a lot of things to overcome, especially the way they started the year, but they improved in a lot of metrics last season. They only had 3 interceptions in 2023, had 14 last season. They were able to get to the quarterback at a more effective rate, increase their sack totals, and they were much better against the run and limiting explosive passes. So if they can do all those things and keep building on what they showcased in last November. I hate talking about the past in a sense, but it is so important to the narrative of Florida because the reason there's all this belief in the Gators, not just internally in the football facility, but a lot of people externally, in the media, picking them to finish 6th in the conference when a year ago they were 12th and naming eight players to the preseason All-SEC teams. A lot of that is predicated on the notion that we're going to see more of the November 2024 Gators throughout the 2025 season rather than this team that in September and October just left a lot to be desired despite the talent there. And if they can do that, I do think that they're going to be a dark horse candidate to compete in the SEC for one of those last spots in the college football playoff. Obviously, everything has to go according to plan. Guys have to stay healthy. You have to protect DJ Lagway. You can't allow those opportunities to slip by. You got to win some road games in this conference, which is so difficult. But if they can do all those things, they definitely have the components to be a team that we're talking about here in late November is maybe sneaking in to the college football playoff if they take care of business.
So you sort of hit on it there. You know, Florida starts off with a couple of the easy non-conference games. Then it's at LSU, at Miami, off week, Texas at home, at Texas A&M. That's when, and then Mississippi State comes to Gainesville. If you had to make a quick projection, you know, what do you think this Florida Gator team will be when State arrives on October the 18th?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that they're 4-2. You know, if they can do that, you know, those first couple games, no offense to Long Island and USF, like you said, they should be better tune-up
games. Fine programs, Graham. Fine programs, but
I don't want to call them inferior competition because you actually got to go out there and win the games. But let's be quite honest, they pale from a talent perspective to the teams that the Gators are going to face for the next 10 games on their schedule. So if they can win those two games and get some momentum, go into Baton Rouge, obviously a tough night game, you know, in Death Valley, Tiger Stadium against one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, an LSU team that I think is going to be a lot better than a lot of people expect. I think this is the year for Brian Kelly. You look at what they did in the transfer portal, getting the number one class, getting Nussmeier back, a lot of key pieces returning on their defense from Harold Perkins to, you know, multiple guys that they added along the defensive front along with him. I think they're going to be really, really good. Then obviously hosting Texas, let's see what happens with Arch Manning. You know, that team has a ton of talent, and I'm not going to sit here and discredit the Longhorns, but they do have to come to Gainesville, and you have a chance when you're hosting that team to steal that one necessarily. And then, you know, going to Texas A&M, I think that of the games that we just mentioned on this in this first half of the season, that's probably going to be the most underrated difficult game for Florida. You know, I do think that when you talk about quarterbacks just not getting respect, I'm surprised that more people aren't higher on Marcel Reed coming into this year. I think he's going to be tremendous. And I think that what the Aggies have done in rebuilding that program and getting them back on track under Elko, they're going to be a much better team than I think a lot of people expect. I think they're a top 10 team this year. I also am not super high on this Miami team. I'm going to need to see it to believe it. You know, they're going from the number one offense in college football to turning to a guy in Carson Beck that Florida was able to pick off three times last year. And he had a better coaching staff around him, and you could argue a better supporting cast. So I do think that that is going to be a game that's more of a toss-up than people think. I know you look at last year and see 41-17 in Gainesville. You know, the Gators have no chance down there in Miami. I think it's going to be a lot closer game than people expect. So if they can get out of those with even just two losses at the midpoint of the season, you look at the way the rest of the season, you know, shapes up. Mississippi State, Kentucky, Florida State, all winnable games for the Gators. No offense, don't hate me up there in Starkville. But, you know, they're all games that I think
Florida's 2-10. Graham, we kind of know where we are up here, yeah.
Great people, great program. You know, they're going to get back, absolutely. A lot of pride there. I have no doubt about it. But I think Florida's roster and the continuity on the coaching staff just in a better spot right now. And I think that, if you know, eight wins is very manageable for this Florida team. Obviously, they have to go to Ole Miss down the stretch, and that's going to be a tough game. Face Tennessee, another team with a lot of questions, but a chance to be really, really good when you look at that defense. And if they can get efficient quarterback play, I think they're going to be really, really good. But the schedule shapes up where the Gators have a chance to win eight, maybe nine games this upcoming season. And when you look at that schedule and how it compares to those around the country, easily a top five schedule when it comes to most difficult. If you're 8-4, even in the SEC with that schedule, there's going to be a lot of people out there who are saying you deserve a chance to play in the college football playoff to show what you can do, especially if you show late season improvements the way the Gators did last year. So if they can get out of that first half, that brutal month of facing LSU, Miami, Texas, Texas A&M, you know, if they can get out of that and still have some momentum and not be fractured and be building and improving, then I do think that the Gators are going to be in the contention to make the CFP for the first time under Napier.
One last question, and you can give a quick answer if you want. Is it weird playing Tennessee in November? It's weird to see it on the schedule like that.
Yeah, I think the last time it happened, I was 8 years old. I
Oh.
was thinking about skipping the dentist and how much recess I
Was
would
that
get.
0-1? Was that would
It
have been
was 0-1.
after
And it went
9/11, so
though.
that doesn't even count,
Yeah, it
That was
doesn't even
scheduled.
count.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this. This is the latest I can remember. Certainly in my 10 years being on the beat here, where I
Yeah.
can remember Florida playing Tennessee this time of the year, which is really, really interesting. I like the change because you're so used to it being a mid-September matchup or a mid-October matchup. And then either one of those teams, depending on how they finish down the slate, is going to sit here and potentially discredit the other team's victory, right? Where they're going to say, well, if they played us in November when we were this good and had figured some things
Yeah.
out, look how good we could be. I'm glad that it's going to be in November. Certainly you're going to have some caveats where people are going to say, well, we had this guy injured, this guy injured. But this is when teams should be hitting their stride from a scheme standpoint, understanding what they need to do to win. Guys are more developed. You've built up your second and third string guys to be able to contribute at a higher rate if injuries do occur. I like this game being in November for the final SEC game. You're kind of, if you're Florida, going back to back with rivalry games to end the
Yeah.
year, facing Tennessee and then Florida State. I like that. I don't like the you have an inferior opponent in the last week of the season.
Yeah.
I don't like that whatsoever because you should absolutely, it's recency bias in a sense where teams are going to be trying to put their best, most positive impression on display at the end of the
Yeah.
year. And I think that Florida versus Tennessee, those two teams are going to be potentially in the college football playoff discussion, and seeing them duke it out in late November is going to be awesome to watch.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture like a September Egg Bowl, and I just can't get my head around that. So we'll see what happens. All right, Graham, we will talk to you again as we get a little closer to October the 18th. Bring you back to the podcast then, man. Appreciate your time. Graham Hall, Swamp 24/7. Always glad to talk about the Florida Gators with you.
Absolutely. Always my pleasure, Brian. We got to do it again soon.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.